And we become great friends. I mean, close. We'll just sit in the front room, and we'll sit there. And he'll walk, he'll go to the front door, kind of knock on the door, and then sit down, then I'll sit, and then he stands, and he's out in the front. And then he'll come in, we just sit there. And he'll stand, and I'll sit, and then I stand, and you sit, and then we're both looking at each other, and we're just nodding, like a couple of nodders, right?
TBTL.
Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's Friday. Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend.
Well, there's that fine line between, you know, showing emotion and being a hot dog.
What do you think the stripes are in the American flag? They're hot dogs. They're boiled and unboiled hot dogs, white and red and white and red.
Isn't it a shame that this kind of thing has come up? It's what the Bible calls it, an abomination.
Well, obviously, I'm not a big guy. I'm not a Carl Weathers, par exemple.
We have to get drinks. Several drinks. Don't you think? Let's celebrate.
Celebrate drinking. Okay.
I've got one right here. It's a piping hot cup of coffee on this Friday morning edition of TBTL, the show that just might be too beautiful to live.
Isn't that for techno geeks with spreadsheets?
My name is Luke Burbank. I'm your host.
Y'all know why I'm here.
Coming to you from the comfortable confines of the Hotel Deluxe in Portland, Oregon, the Bay City. Hi there, everybody. Welcome to the show. It's episode 2583 in a collector's series.
Jalapeno.
And we have lots to talk about on this Friday.
Let the fun begin.
The Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie.
I just love hot Cheetos!
It is a real thing, people. It is happening. And the story behind the invention of Flamin' Hot Cheetos is actually really fascinating. And we will share that with you coming up on the program. Also, tried to talk about this yesterday, ran out of time, but Quincy Jones made some big time waves when he just basically just dropped bombs of truth on like every famous person from Bono to Michael Jackson to Paul Allen, actually, in an interview with New York Magazine. But apparently he's walking that back.
Okay, you're a perfectionist. Flashes of Quincy.
I will play that drop anytime I get the chance. I'm a Flashes of Quincy drop man, like my father and his father before him, and I make no apologies about it, people. Let's get the longest-running Cobra of the show on the line. He bought a hot air balloon, but it doesn't mean he thinks he's better than anyone else. I love sitting around and podcasting with this guy, just podding like a couple of podders. Believe it or not, he's a complete catch.
Believe it or not, I'm a complete catch.
He is Andrew
Cobrowns
Walsh, and he joins us now from the Wallingford neighborhood of Seattle, Washington. Good morning, my dude.
Good morning, my dude. I feel like I had... I'm having that tip of the tongue thing. I feel like I had like four things I want to tell you right at the top of the show, and now I can't think of a single thing to talk about. Should we wrap early, or
yeah.
Do you have anything like on your mind? What's the show sheet say here?
You know, if we were to someday just call it after like say 4 minutes on an episode, but then average the total amount of time we did the whole week, as long as it came out to 5 hours total or 1 hour per day, I think we can get away with that. I mean, there are definitely shows that have an extra 1 to 2 hours of content that we could just sort of apply the balance forward to today. It's a Friday, dude. It's my Friday. Did you know that? So I'm great with calling it.
Holy cow. It's my Friday as well. I guess when it comes to, we got to look at our contracts, I think. What do our contracts hold us to? 5 hours of original content a week? 1 hour a day? I think we should get the lawyers
involved. I think it's 500 a week.
Oh, okay. 10,000.
Yeah, that's rich.
I don't know. That's rich.
I don't think we even have, to be totally honest with you. Let's start this here, Andrew. Let's do this. I don't think that it actually specifies how much show we have to create on a weekly basis.
Oh, no.
I mean, or if it does.
I don't think. Well, do you have a contract? You want to actually talk? I don't have a contract. I'm just a, you know,
there's
employee.
Some kind of contractual agreement between us and I think the magician El Ropo.
Okay.
But I believe the Magic Castle lost the paperwork on it. So at this point, we're kind of just flying blind.
And okay.
We're out there without a net.
Let's call it a day. No, let's not call it a day. We just went through a lot of work to get through that intro, to dial up with you in Portland. Let's not waste this, and I'm going to stop being so negative. Speaking of being you in Portland, you just opened up, is the right terminology, did you just open up a new season of LiveWire last night?
Well, it is a new season, but we don't want the radio listeners to know that. In other words, we play shows every week. You're not blowing up my spot. What I mean is, like, when I got, you know, on the stage last night and was talking to the crowd, I was like, hey, welcome back. It's great to see you. But, like, on the radio show, I don't say, we're back, because the idea is we hope nobody noticed that they were hearing some encore editions of LiveWire.
So that means you're not taking full advantage of your George Costanza screaming, I'm back, baby, drop on LiveWire.
I'm more into...
Okay, you're perfectionist.
Flashes of Quincy these days.
I'm looking forward to talking about that story. I'm also very excited about music for your weekend today. Let's just forward promote. I picked out a song almost a full week ago, so I've been sitting on a music for your weekend since last Sunday. I'm dying to get to that.
Me too. I've been keeping my powder really dry on that. There was a musician who I'm going to recommend this week. I had literally never heard of the guy 2 weeks ago, and then heard of him for one reason or another, and then went to his website and was like, whoa, I love this dude, and I've been listening to him nonstop since I heard about him. And he's going to be on LiveWire March 24th.
Oh, wow. We just did a forward promo and a cross promo, man.
Yeah, and he is Boz Skaggs.
He's my favorite Boz.
Well, you know, I would say it is a relatively short list. You got Brian Bosworth.
Yep.
And Boz Skaggs, and then maybe Thomas Boswell, the one-time sports writer for the Washington Post.
Oh, that's a new one to me.
Anybody else? Any other famous Bozes?
Lerman?
Ha! Ooh, going with the non-traditional spelling.
Right. I think that's it. I think we've named all the Bozes. Is that in our contract? How many Bozes do we have to name per show?
I mean, what do you call a collection of Bozes, more importantly? Is it a mohawk of Bozes? And is it a possible show title?
Is it a saxophone? What does Boz Skaggs do?
I'm thinking
sing?
Bosworth, like Brian Bosworth. See, but no, you're right. It's a working class anthem of Bosworths. Wait, I don't think Boz Skaggs' name is Bosworth. A working class anthem of Bozes?
I'm going to go with a mohawk of Bozes, and then I will run it by the Audubon Society and see if we got that right.
Good stuff. Hey, are you excited for the weekend? Like, do you have big plans?
Let's see. Do I have big plans? I'm going to eat French dip tonight at my local Eagles Airy.
Nice.
And that's about as far. Oh, I have a dentist appointment before that. And then before that, I'm going to play for you some music for your weekend. That's all I have planned so far. What about you?
Well, I'm going to go visit my namesake today, Little Luke. And my nephew, Luke, who is, I don't know. It's like.
You'd be his namesake, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
Or is he your namesake?
Yeah, right. Okay. So I'm going to go see the kid that I'm the namesake of.
Okay.
I mean, sort of. Basically, what happened was I didn't ruin the name Luke for my sister and my brother-in-law, so I consider that kind of an accomplishment. And I'm trying to get a new thing started with him. I want to call him Double L, like Little Luke, or LL, or something.
LL Cool Luke?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. But that would be Little Luke Cool Luke, so it's a lot of Luke in there. But
yeah.
Just trying to get some kind of cool nickname going. I also want to – he's little. Like, he's – I don't know how old he is. He's like a year old. I'm trying to use like Vulcan mind meld technology when I hang out with him to let him know how important I am in his life because he's named for me. So I'm going to work on that this afternoon. So that should be fun.
That's your plan, is to sit down and kind of crack that code?
Yeah, just like stare deep into his eyes and just kind of like let him know that I'm a very important part of his life. So that's kind of the plan for me down here in Portland. I'm excited about it.
Don't let him get up during this, okay? Make sure that he's like sitting the whole time very, very still. While you stare at him deep in his eyes.
I want to give him a speech kind of like the speech that Bruce Willis's character as a baby gets in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
From Christopher Walken. And let me just say, for those who've seen the movie, yes, I am bringing a gold watch with me.
Mm-hmm. Where's it been? You know what? Let's save that. Well, tell me on Monday.
All right, let's do this. Let us take a quick break and just kind of just meditate on that. Disturbing thought about me and LL Cool Luke, aka the namesake of me, And then when we come back, we'll do top stories. We'll thank some donors of the day. We will do emails and V-mails, and we will do music for your weekend. I've never heard Andrew more excited to lay a song on his
episode. Think I've oversold
it. Better be good. Like this better be the best Boz Skaggs I have ever
heard. Do you want to know the truth? It might even be a song you've played on the show before. It's like a four-year-old song that I just recently re-fell in love with.
All right, quick break, and then we will be right back. I know this song, but I cannot place it. Who is it again?
It's a band called The Magic Numbers. There was a time when this was literally my favorite song in the world of all time. I listened to this song 10 times a day, every day, for a period of my life when I was living in New Hampshire. I was obsessed.
As did a certain ex-girlfriend of mine who was obsessed with The Magic Numbers and would play them all the time. That is exactly where I know this song from.
Really?
Yeah. We have a lot to still try to get to on today's show, Andrew, but we have a little bit of TBTL breaking news.
TBTL breaking news.
I think it's possible that Fred Savage from The Wonder Years is a time traveler.
Okay. Could you give me more context?
I think we have our show pick, too. So a couple have got more content and the show pick is handled, so let's consider that a double win.
What's happening?
Here in the Hotel Deluxe, which is the decor of the Hotel Deluxe in Portland, Oregon, is Hollywood glamour. Old Hollywood glamour, like black and white, like, you know, the movies of Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman, etc. And so they have these beautiful, huge black and white photos everywhere, like in the halls, in the rooms, in the lobby when you come in, of like, you know, classic movies and classic movie sets and things like that. And I just looked over. There's one in my room. I've never even noticed it. I just, as The Magic Numbers were playing, I glanced over to my right. And there's a picture of Humphrey Bogart. Actually, you could probably like Google this and get to the picture I'm talking about if you put these names in. So put in Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman, and Fred Savage. Now, there's a picture of Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman from some movie that are probably in France. She's wearing a beret, and they're reading a newspaper with great interest in like a looks like a French outdoor cafe, and there's like the waiter is standing behind them in the background, and talking to the waiter is, I'm pretty sure, Fred Savage. Like, it's like a Jack Nicholson in the end of The Shining photo. It's like, how did?
By the way, it's the very first photo to come up on Google Images when you type in Humphrey Bogart, Ingrid Bergman newspaper. It's
okay.
A Getty image.
Okay, so you see what I'm talking about, right? You've got this photo up.
Is the Fred Savage guy wearing a beret?
Yeah, no, it's not the guy that looks like Mark Twain. Yeah, of course he's the guy in the beret.
Yeah. He looks more like you.
Oh, I'll take it. I will take it.
Yeah.
So you don't think that's Fred Savage?
I don't think it's Fred Savage, but what if he did? What if Fred's? Is he the most unlikely guy in our culture to be a Zelig like a character?
Ah, nice use of Zelig like. See,
the
I don't
most likely.
I think he's up there. He and Neil Patrick Harris, I think, have special powers. Their special powers are to escape the clutches of childhood stardom to actually have adult stardom.
Yes, that is true. And also, you know, one thing that would really help if they really are, now I'm just totally buying in to my new reality, which is these two guys are indeed time travelers who are zipping around time and space, sometimes together, sometimes independently, but always staying in touch.
Right.
They both have a kind of especially Neil Patrick Harris has a timeless kind of look that would really help.
Yes, he could fit in anywhere. I'm sure that if you go through some of those old, like, Civil War battlefield photographs, you will see Neil Patrick Harris, like, in the background.
Sawing off somebody's leg.
Oh, God. Soon. Yeah, I would not have done well in the Civil War. I'm just here to tell you that. I would.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm barely doing okay in 2018. And that's with all of the modern medicine and pain relief and, you know, sort of sterile operating theaters that we have now. I would not have been okay in those days.
That's basically where I am. That's my thought process every single time I watch any movie that takes place earlier than 2013. Like, you know, even if it's a fake universe, like Game of Thrones, at least once an episode I'll turn to Genevieve and say, I wouldn't do well in this universe. You know, if I'm watching like a historical fiction or nonfiction kind of thing, you know that I'm not going to be the person who's inside the castle walls, right? I'm going to be somebody who's at best dumping out buckets of poo in the streets, at worst getting buckets of poo dumped on me in the streets. I just don't think that I could survive any time earlier than the era I live in.
Best case scenario,
the time that I was a child.
For you, best case scenario would be you would be on Redfin looking at new places in Flea Bottom.
Right.
Yeah. I wonder if I lived back in the olden times, I wonder if there would just be. Because I feel like I'm just so. It's ironic because my little chat at the beginning of Livewire last night was kind of about that mantra that I talked about on TBTL about like everything not being perfect and being okay with that. And I really have been using that in my life, and it really has been helping me. But I wonder if Middle Ages Luke would be looking around and thinking like, isn't there something more? Or or if Middle Ages Luke would just like be like somehow calmer of the mind. Like, is the way that I am just the result of the way my brain chemistry is, or is it the result of growing up in the technological era that I've grown up in?
Medieval Luke has a catapult but wants a trebuchet.
Oh, man.
Medieval Luke is like looking at the prices of houses in Flea Bottom, wishing that he had bought earlier. I'm there too, by the way, complaining about the fact that Flea Bottom isn't like raw and real anymore. It's like it's like the ladle in the torch is like the name of the new inn there.
Middle Ages Luke has decided to stop nailing messages to the various doors in the town because he was just thinking about it too much. He would like nail a message, and then he kept hanging around to see how many people came by to read it. And he was just like, "I'm not being present."
Right. Yes. You know what? I'm just gonna go back, and I think I'm gonna get another ship. Is probably what you were thinking.
That'd be great. I would just have like a series of galleons that I couldn't operate, but that I was acquiring to try to fill some emotional hole. That was another thing last night. I know we got to move on, but like so. Remember yesterday when I was at your house, I was talking about trying some new stuff with Livewire. Like, we're going to try a few different things.
Yeah, how'd that go?
I think it was, well, like my lovemaking, rough but promising.
I'm giving you a chance to strike that from the record.
That really sent a chill down the line, didn't it? As well it should have. You know, I don't think that the new stuff we rolled out was exactly perfect, but I thought that with some tweaks and with some continued dedication to it, some of these new segments I think could actually be pretty interesting. So the irony, though, is that I started the show off talking about how like I'm trying to do better at being okay when things aren't perfect, and then throughout the whole show when things weren't perfect, I was like internally freaking the flip out. But overall it went well. That guy George Saunders, oh my goodness gracious, he is like, I don't even. Are you familiar with his work at all? Have you heard him interviewed or read any of his stuff? Do you remember?
Mm-mm.
I was in the summer. I was going crazy for this Trump. It was actually in 2016. This Trump piece that was in the New Yorker, where George Saunders went and just kind of like hung out at Trump rallies and interviewed Trump supporters, and it was. I think to this day, one of the more illuminating things I've ever read about just that world and kind of what motivates the people in that world. That's his nonfiction writing, which he's like one of the best nonfiction. Like he's – I don't know how many New Yorker pieces he's written, but every – or like Harper's pieces. He'll like crank out a piece of journalism and it'll be like, oh, that's the best journalism I've ever read. And then he'll write some like short story and I'll be like, that's one of the best short stories I've ever read. Then I'll hear him on Fresh Air and I'll be like, that's one of the best interviews I've ever heard on Fresh Air. He's just like a total – he's just amazing to me. So – he was a total sweetheart. He had been on a book tour, and he was on like the 16th straight day of doing interviews. So his voice was hoarse. It was a little bit of a struggle for him, but he was totally game, and was just wonderful. And then, you know, the other guests were fun and interesting. So the show went fine, but I was in an internal battle with myself to try to live out the ideals throughout the show that I had set forth in the monologue. And, you know, it was a sort of a struggle for me.
Ah. But like you say, so this is the beginning of a journey, though, right?
Yes, and I'm trying to remember that because, like, when things weren't exactly – so let me just tell you this. We sort of were trying out a couple of new segments. One thing we're trying is called the Jar of Truth, and it's a jar that just has five questions that we've written in it. And the first guest at the – after we've kind of done the interview, they have to pull something out of the Jar of Truth and answer the question. And those five questions – the idea right now is those five questions will, like, never change, maybe for, like, a whole season.
Mm.
Just to kind of – it's almost like the Proust questionnaire, but it's our version of it, you know? And
sounds to me like the question of the day that was a very, very popular segment here on TBTL for 2 weeks while you were out.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's also known as the question of the day amidst the Jar of Truth. So
it's what they call a Walshian concept in literature circles.
Right, right. So we actually, George Saunders talked about that at one point because he does teach literature at Syracuse. So.
Great.
So anyway, we tried that. It was fun. I think it kind of worked. We also want to try to figure out a way to get more people who are maybe not particularly famous, but they're doing something interesting on the show. And so we sort of have created this new segment we're calling New Fascinating Friend. And so that was a woman who has created this group called Unlikely Hikers. And it's basically like an Instagram page and a get-together for people who like traditionally don't get out in the outdoors. People of color, people, you know, who their body shape is not maybe the traditional size you'll see in an REI ad or whatever, you know, queer people, et cetera. So we talked to her, and she was actually pretty interesting. And this was the kind of thing that, like, last year on the show, there wouldn't have been a particular spot that made, like, perfect sense to have somebody on who's, again, not maybe really well known, but maybe you would want to know about because they're doing something interesting. So we rolled that out, and I think that was sort of a, you know, I think that worked pretty well. So, yeah, I was overall I would say it was a solid B, and I think we can keep tweaking it if I can stay with it. Because the thing I was going to say is every time something's not going right, I'm thinking in my mind, well, we just can't do this again. Like it's hard for me to not want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. But anyway, enough about
that. Could be another segment where you throw babies
out with bathwater.
Maybe
not. Technically legal in Oregon. This is such a snowflake state.
Oh, it's in Oregon. I always forget that you're doing it in Oregon. Sorry.
Yeah, exactly. Let's do this. Let us thank some donors of the day. These are the generous folks who are making today's episode of the show possible with their donations during the most recent TBTL-a-thon. And they are Michelle Swan of Phoenix, Arizona, James Callahan of Boca Raton, Florida. Do you go with Boca Raton or Boca Raton?
Boca Raton. I need to set the record straight on something.
Wow.
James Callahan. He is, in fact, the guy who I used to play Hearthstone with when I was new to Hearthstone. He had a new baby, an actual baby that he didn't throw. I had a new baby called Hearthstone on my iPad that I didn't know how to play, and we started playing Hearthstone together, and he showed me the ropes. This would have been, I think, early last summer, maybe the summer before, I guess 2 years ago now. And every time this other guy named Jason comes up, I say that Jason was the guy who taught me that, but it was actually James. So I just want to make that clear, and apologies to James for all the times I've messed that up.
Is there a name in Hearthstone for someone who's like a sort of mentor to you? Is he like your wizard, your Hearthstone wizard or something?
Yeah, let's say that I am the druid to his C'Thun.
Oh.
I don't know exactly what that means, but those were the first two names that
popped. Would you consider yourself sort of the bogey to his time-traveling Fred Savage?
Yes.
Okay.
That's exact. And I think, as a matter of fact, he's told me that before. That's how he sees that relationship, which is interesting that it would come up today on the show.
I just wanted to try to really frame. You can't see because I'm in Portland, but I'm making a frame with my hands.
Oh, interesting.
I'm trying to frame your relationship with listener and donor of the day, James Callahan of Boca Raton. Then also we've got Derek Weichel of Philadelphia, PA. I'm going to just, like, this is, how do I say this? Well, I know how to say it, but why do I say it? Bigger question. one of the most wonderful things that I've seen in a little while, and when people hear what I'm going to say, they're going to be like, that's not that big of a deal. Why were you excited about that? Carrie and I watch a show, Top Chef, and also DFTB when he decides to emerge from TB. Will watch the show with us. And you're familiar with the program. You've watched the program, right?
I've never watched it. It's one of the competition ones,
right? Yeah, it's a
cooking
show. And there was a dude on – so, you know, I don't – like, yeah, it's a competitive cooking show. But with people that are, you know, actual chefs and like, have restaurants or work at restaurants or whatever. So there was a dude on the show from Philly. His name was Chris, originally from Philly, I think, who was so awesome. He was just, like, a real menschy guy. He was, like sometimes on those shows, those reality shows, the people can be backbitey and, like – I don't like that dynamic on a reality show. Like, it does not make me more interested in a show when there's drama, either real or ginned up by the producers. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, actually, last night,
ginned up, I would assume.
I was talking to a couple of people about the Great British Bake Off last night, and they were saying what they loved about it was that everyone's respectful to each other, the competitors. Not a show that's built around like fake drama of, you know.
Yeah.
So anyway, I'm the same way. I know that kind of stuff actually makes me feel tense. So this dude, Chris, was just like real salt of the earth guy. He made it to like the top five and ended up, you know, getting knocked off the show, which was kind of a bummer because he just seemed like one of the good guys on the show. But he had also randomly won this one competition. And by the way, these shows are recorded, you know, months ago. So let's just say about 6 months ago, he's like cooking up a storm and he wins this one competition. And what they say is your prize is for winning this is two tickets to the Super Bowl in Minnesota. And dude is like a diehard Eagles fan. And I took such joy watching him win this because I was like, he doesn't even know how effing stoked he is right now.
Oh, interesting. So you know what the prize is before he knows.
No, I know that the Eagles win the Super Bowl.
Oh!
Right. Like, I know that the Eagles improbably go to the Super Bowl after the injury to Carson Wentz. This is all the future to him. And he's just like, he's just psyched to be going. But all these pictures of him, like, from his real life, he's like wearing Eagles gear and he's like, you know, like really excited about this football team. And I'm watching him and I'm like, he does not even know that the Eagles.
He doesn't even know they're going.
He doesn't even know they're going to the Super Bowl. He doesn't know who's in the Super Bowl. He doesn't know the insanity of that specific Super Bowl. He doesn't know that they are going to go for it at the end of the first half and run the greatest trick play probably in the history of the NFL. Like, he doesn't know any of this. And because he was such a good guy and I was rooting for him, I was like, oh, dude, I am so pumped for what you are going to find out in 6 months.
You know what we got to do? We got to get Fred Savage.
Yeah. Oddly anyway. Enough, in that competition, on that show, I did see Fred Savage in the background sous-viding some fish. So Derek Weichel's in Philadelphia, PA. Thanks, Derek. And then S. Bornfleth of Seattle, Washington. Thank you, S. I hope S is choosing to just go by the initial S, and it wasn't some kind of a clerical error on our part.
I know, me too. I had one like that for the web thank you the other day, and I wasn't sure. It seemed odd, because it wasn't S period or P period. It was just the letter S, which seems like it was a Snickers commercial where somebody accidentally leaned on the keyboard because they got tired and deleted something.
Well, here we go. We have got no choice. I'd like to thank Steve Bornfleth of Seattle, Washington. Like to thank Sue Bornfleth of Seattle, Washington. Okay. Like
Sandra.
To thank Sandra Bornfleth. Oh, so yeah. I think that's all the S names.
Stu
Bornfleth of Seattle, Washington.
Summer
Bornfleth. I don't know what the delay is on this line. It's probably 6 seconds later I say the last name.
Nope. I'm just having trouble coming up with them. I've five S names, and I'm basically tapped out.
Oh, man. What did we call it? A working class anthem of Boz's. And who knows what the collection of S names are that we just reeled off. But the important thing is that we thank Michelle, James, Derek, and S, whatever your full name is, for supporting TBTL. We could not be here doing episode 2583 in a collector series without you.
Hello and welcome to Top Story.
All right. Our top story today, Andrew. They are making a Flamin' Hot Cheetos movie, and it actually sounds pretty interesting.
You're kidding me. I saw this headline, and I guess I – do I say that once a show? Everybody drink when Andrew says he saw a headline and he didn't click on it. but, yeah, I kind of saw this floating around, but I didn't know the details. I am shocked to hear you say that it actually sounds like it could be something worth watching.
Well, there are just so many dazzling details in this story from the Washington Post. It's basically a movie about the dude who invented Flamin' Hot Cheetos, who was a janitor at Frito-Lay and saw a corporate training video that made him – feel like he could go to the CEO and pitch the idea of Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
No shit.
Yeah, the dude is named Richard Montanez, and he I'll just kind of go back to the origin of his life. He grew up on a farm migrant labor camp in Guasti, California. He was one of 11 siblings. He picked grapes at the vineyards. And sort of just lived a very agrarian, very itinerant, very humble life out there. But as he writes in his memoir, "A Boy, a Burrito, and a Cookie," when Richard started going to this white elementary school during segregation in California, where they would take the Spanish-speaking kids in a bus that was green while the white children rode in a yellow bus. Oh, so what the heck? This guy says, you know, in his memoir, the inventor of Flamin' Hot Cheetos, that he would go to school as a kid and he was embarrassed because his mom would send him with burritos and for lunch. And he asked his mom to just make him something that was normal, which is to say more like white. And instead, the next day, his mom made him two burritos and told him, make a friend.
That's sweet.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good advice. And by the end of the week, so the story goes, he was selling burritos to his white classmates for 25 cents each. Guy's kind of a natural sort of entrepreneur. But he doesn't, at this point, really speak very much English at all. And so he's not able to, like, he drops out of school because he can't speak English. He works various low-paying jobs, including slaughtering chickens, working as a gardener. He eventually starts to pick up some English. And when he's 12 years old, he gets a job working as a janitor at a Frito-Lay plant in California. And one day, Andrew, as he told Lowrider magazine, that's another dazzling detail. The sources that this guy's story are pulled from are pretty awesome. They include his memoir, let me repeat, A Boy, a Burrito, and a Cookie, and also an in-depth interview he did with Lowrider magazine.
Which actually gets a lot of scoops. A lot of people do not give Lowrider credit for the number of stories that that publication breaks.
Yes, they are definitely kind of at the edge of a lot of the real investigative journalism about how low a rider should be. I mean, they're just constantly breaking news on that.
I remember they did a huge story about a sexed up dossier about lowriders. I don't know if you remember that one.
Who can forget? So as he told Lowrider magazine, as he's working as a janitor in the Frito-Lay factory, by the way, 12 seems young to be working as a janitor, but okay.
Yeah.
So it's some years later, and he sees a company-wide video of the then CEO of Frito-Lay, Roger Enrico, saying, quote, "We want every worker in this company to act like an owner. Make a difference. You belong to this company, so make it better." He sees this video. He's a janitor, but he takes it to heart. He says, here's the CEO telling me, the janitor, that I can act like an owner. So, one of the things that's funny to me is it's like, you know, peace and love to corporate America, including the corporation we work for. But there's like so much just like corporate bullshit that goes on, you know, like kind of inspirational messages that are, you know, pinned up in the break room and videos that are released by the CEO of whatever the company is. And most of it is like well-intentioned but does not hit you where you live. But it sounds like this guy really took it to heart that he could act like an owner of the company.
Mm-hmm.
So one day he's working on the assembly line. I guess he sort of got promoted from janitor, got up to the assembly line at the Frito-Lay factory. And the assembly line breaks down. And there is a batch of Cheetos that don't get their orange cheesy dust because the assembly line breaks down. So he takes home these like undusted Cheetos to do some home experimenting. And because he grew up eating elote, which is like that grilled Mexican street corn, which has that like cheese and butter and lime and chili on it, which, oh my God. I would say that's in the top three things I miss about living in Los Angeles. Hot dogs wrapped in bacon that are just cooking randomly on the street from God knows where. Mm-hmm. That corn on the cob that is being sold. And nice weather. Those are the three things I miss about Los Angeles. So he basically has these like Cheetos that he's brought home. These like, I don't know what you call them, au naturel Cheetos that he's brought home. And then he thinks, what if I put that kind of you know, stuff on it that we put on the corn on the cob? And so he did, and he passes it around, and his friends and his family like love the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. They're like, this is so awesome. And he remembers the video of the CEO. So he calls the CEO to pitch the idea, and the CEO takes the call, which is also kind of cool that, like, I mean, you know, this guy's like at this point working on an assembly line, and he calls the guy and he's like, I got a great idea. And the CEO's like, all right, come on in and tell me about it. So he gives him 2 weeks to get his presentation together. And this guy still doesn't really speak English like super well. So he buys his first tie he's ever bought for $3, and he goes to the library and he checks out a book on marketing. And he copies the strategy. He basically just memorizes like a marketing pitch from this book to go in and like make his pitch. And then he says that he designed the bag, because he kind of likes art, to put the Flamin' Hot Cheetos in. And so he goes in and he pitches the Flamin' Hot Cheetos. And the CEO, as you might imagine, loves the idea, and they start making them. And that's how Flamin' Hot Cheetos got invented.
But then they fire him because they find out that he's been taking malfunctioning chips home, and you're not allowed to take any product home.
I mean, come
off
on.
Of the factory floor.
You got to have rules. You got to have rules.
Yeah, absolutely. I also like the fact that the chips were malfunctioning in my world.
Yes,
apparently.
Not
I've never had a malfunctioning. I've never had a malfunctioning chip before.
Now I will say this: as I read to the end of this story, what my brain really learned is that I don't understand how business exactly works, because in my mind, the guy who invented Flaming Hot Cheetos should be rich beyond all belief. But he's not. He just has a better job at Frito-Lay now than working on the assembly line, because of course he doesn't own Flamin' Hot Cheetos.
Right.
Frito-Lay owns Flamin' Hot Cheetos. Like, in my mind,
but is he in like the is he in some sort of a development role now?
Okay, so he's served in various positions throughout the company, including as an executive vice president. So he definitely got a big upgrade. But now he travels around the country giving speeches on the importance of diversity in business. So I think he's kind of a, you know, ambassador for the Frito-Lay brand. And Lord knows, it's a great story. But honestly, it wasn't until I got to the end of this piece in the Washington Post that I was like, oh, he doesn't have his own private island funded by Flamin' Hot Cheetos bucks. Because in my mind, I was like, shit, this dude rich. He invented Flamin' Hots, but of course, that's Frito-Lay's property. It's still a pretty cool story, though.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I want to come back to this. I think that's a fascinating story. I don't know if I'd want to watch the movie. I think I would just I liked you telling me the story. I don't know if I need to see the movie. One thing I was going to say, I'm going to interrupt here for a second, because I just feel, I don't know. I don't know if you can tell. I feel out of it today. I don't know what my problem is, but I'm having some trouble communicating, I feel like. I don't know why, but one thing that is driving me crazy, can you hear, he's stopped now, but could you hear before, damn Theo, my cat just crying like crazy in the background?
No,
you
cannot.
You can hear that?
But I'm in
Portland.
Well,
it's driving me crazy.
Wearing, you know, iPhone earbuds, so I don't know if I'm like, if I'm in the best acoustic setting to hear everything that's happening at your house.
Well, we're not doing the show that early today, but just in the past week, we've been doing it a little bit earlier, and we actually started by our standards on the slightly earlier side. And that is one downfall is, here's how my day goes here at the homestead. I wake up, the cats are going crazy, they want me to feed them right away. They have various routines that they do. It starts with hopping on the bed. It also includes when I feed them after I take a shower. I'm like, I don't care, you guys can wait, you guys can handle this, I'm taking a shower, that's priority number one. Then I'll come out, then I'll get dressed, then I'll straighten up a little bit, and I'll feed you during the straightening up process. And they do various things to kind of urge me along, like hop up on the bathroom sink and stuff while I'm drying. Anyway, all of that happens, and then what happens is after they eat, there is a period of restlessness, especially on the part of Theo, who will kind of wander around crying like an asshole, and he will sit outside the bedroom door, which I have closed, and just cry and cry and cry because he wants to go back in the bedroom and he wants to sleep on the bed, which I don't usually let him do because they're ruining the covers. So all of that is to say that usually calms down, and then by the time we're recording, he and the other cat are just sleeping somewhere, and everything's calm. Well, all this week, he's been sitting outside my door, crying like crazy, driving me nuts. And so I just I thought, you know what? I'm going to solve this right now. And I took my Reader's Digest. Told you I got Reader's Digest.
Yeah, I saw that. Right? Jealous.
I took one of the inserts from it. You know how Reader's Digest, the very first thing you do when you get a new one is you flip through and you find all those cardboard things that are...
Where they're trying to get you to buy more Reader's Digest?
Yes, yes. So I always tear those out first. I don't like the way they feel. So I muted my microphone a moment ago, and I tore that thing out, and I balled it up, and I kind of threw it in Theo's direction. I thought, that'll show him. That'll shut him up. And you know what happened? Him and the professor are now like a whirling dervish playing with the piece of garbage I just gave them.
That's too cute.
It is cute, but it's also just driving me crazy. I'm trying to have a goddamn conversation about Flaming Hot Cheetos here, and I got a couple of rambunctious cats. Maybe I got to start feeding them earlier. If we keep doing the show on the early side, which I like doing, I got to solve this rambunctious cat problem.
I gotta
anyway,
tell you,
sorry to go there.
There is something about the soul of a cat. There is something intrinsically secretive about a cat.
Here's what you got to do.
That's a long one.
You send Fred Savage back to 17 years ago, and he will tell you not to get Theo.
Oh, I'm not that mad.
Too far?
At him.
Too far?
I mean, it wasn't inappropriate what you said, but it did make me realize what a grump I'm being about.
Because
that I love.
What I said to you, this kind of came up yesterday when I was at your house, and because I have, I mean, I you know, I had sort of. I don't know what you'd call it, co-parenting duties with Pagoda the cat, who was a TBTL icon for a period of time. But I didn't raise Pagoda from being a kitten. And truthfully, I was a little afraid of Pagoda because Pagoda was like a, I don't know, 10-year-old cat when I met her. And we never had a super close bond. So Olive, our the Bay Kitty, is like the first cat I've ever lived with from when it was a kitten. And I am in love with that cat. Not so much in love with me, but whatever. That's just how it works, I guess. And when Olive meows, I love it because it's very cat-like to me. Like, she goes down the hall and she'll be like looking for us. She'll be like meowing up a storm, like almost like with sort of, I think maybe this is just what meows sound like. Maybe they just sound kind of alarmed. Does that make any sense? Like,
some do.
The first few times I heard Olive meow, I thought like, oh my God, she's freaked out. And then I realized, no, that's just her meow. She just sounds like, guys, like that's basically her meow, huh?
Sure, yeah.
What? And she'll be—it's funny because she'll come into the room. We're watching TV. She can see us. She's 12 feet away, and she'll be like, "Guys." We're like, "Yeah, we're right here. What's up?" So I find it charming when she meows because it's very on brand for being a cat. But
you—that's true—have
had two cats for a long time, for longer than I have, and it sounds like it's less charming to you and more just kind of annoying.
Well, there are different kinds of meows, I feel like. You know, every now and then the professor, who's definitely the normal, you know, to his Garfield, she just looks at you with these, like, eyes that are always, like, worried, like, do you still love me? And she gives out these cute little meows, and that's totally endearing. Theo sometimes, if he wants to come snuggle with you, he'll let out a little, kind of a weaker little meow of love, and he'll come hop up on your lap. But then other times like this, he's just not getting what he wants, and he's just sitting outside the door, and he's like practically barking at me. And I've said this to you, I've said this to the listeners, I've said this to Theo many times. I'm sensitive to tone. Like, just why can't he understand that?
Quit meowlering at me.
Just quit meowing. I don't like being meowlered at.
Hey, can you tell me about Quincy Jones's apology? Because I'll tell you what, Andrew, I saw a headline.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't actually read the article.
Let me see. I think I have I put the link here. I'm going to read from the Daily Beast here. Now, do we have to, and I'm making the motion with my fingers, Don O'Neill style, frame this a little bit, or are you comfortable with your setup at the top of the show? Nobody's jumping into the topic here, right?
I think everybody knows Quincy Jones did an interview with New York Magazine, and he just spoke honestly about a variety of performers, many of whom are his friends, and it was kind of cool to see somebody just, you know, say what was really on their mind. So that's the
same. Right, and of course, he talks some shit about the Beatles, saying that he loves them, but they're horrible musicians. He said that Marlon Brando would, quote, fuck anything, ooh, anything. He'd fuck a mailbox. Do we not say that? Sorry, I thought those were quotes that we had used last time.
Yeah,
anyway,
if we're quoting Quincy Jones, right, then we're allowed to use profanity.
He claimed that Michael Jackson stole a lot of songs, including Billie Jean. Anyway, we thought that his unvarnished take on the world as an 80-something-year-old was kind of refreshing a little bit. And not necessarily – it didn't come off as being mean-spirited necessarily. It just came off as being super honest and kind of funny from a guy who's risen as high as you can go in his field. So anyway, here's what he posted to Twitter. It's a very long statement. I'm going to read it directly. A couple of weekends ago, my 6 daughters – who I'm beyond proud of, took me aside to do a surprise family intervention because of some silly things I've said in 2 recent interviews. And I have, all caps, learned my lesson. Let me tell you, I'm so grateful for my daughters because they aren't scared to stand up to their daddy. I am an imperfect human. I'm not afraid to say it. And I'm sorry, and I'm not afraid to say it. When you've been fortunate enough to have lived such a long and crazy life, and you've recently stopped drinking 3 years ago, certain details about specific events which do not paint the full picture of my intentions nor experiences came flooding back all at once. And even at 85, it's apparent that word vomit and bad mouthing is inexcusable. One of the hardest things about this situation is that as bad mouthing has contradicted the very real messages that I try to relay about racism, inequality, homophobia, poverty, you name it. And of course, I don't want that. I have already reached out to my friends privately, but when you live a public life, you have to take responsibility to be an example. And since I do lead a public life, I wanted to make a public apology. And then he goes on to say, I'm sorry to anyone who I offended. I'm especially sorry to my friends who are still here and those who aren't. These friends are like my blood family to me. And so I'm looking here. I don't think he goes on to say anything that he doesn't already cover in those 2 graphs. But
wow,
a very heartfelt apology. And the article I read somehow wanted to, of course, point out that, you know, even his daughter, Rashida Jones, it's Rashida, right? Rashida Jones took him aside and
yeah,
told him
from
that
the office,
make
and
right,
many other places. I believe yeah, his daughter with Peggy Lipton from the Mod Squad.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
That's her mom?
I believe so.
Anyway, so it's a nice apology. I'm a big fan of good apologies. I guess he didn't talk shit about me. So I didn't feel like he needed to issue an apology because there was something about him talking very frank and saying some insulting things about people. But somehow in the tone that I read it or that you read it to me on this show, it seemed like it all was based on a foundation of love. It was just candor.
Yeah.
And somehow the apology kind of bums me out. But, you know, again, I'm not Quincy Jones and I'm not one of the people that he was, you know, flinging shit at.
Yeah, it almost feels like his daughters got together and said, like, you can't say that about Bono, which is
yeah,
like, because he didn't talk about his daughters. Like, they were not the subject of anything
no,
he said. And I'm with you. None of it read to me as mean-spirited. It read, wouldn't this be a world? If the interviewer had asked him about TBTL, let's just say, like, he had been a fan of the show or a friend of the show or whatever, and then he was like, you know, okay, you know, the media landscape is changing. There's all these podcasts. And what about that podcast, TBTL? And if he just said, like, man, I haven't known what they're talking about for the last 6 years, I'd be like, tip of the cap. And then I would still be, like, into Quincy Jones. Like, it wouldn't feel – well, I mean, again, that's an imaginary universe where he even knows that we exist. But I feel
yeah, that'd
like –
be pretty cool.
But I guess what I mean is it's like – it, like you said, it all just kind of felt – like, he was just telling the truth, but not in a mean-spirited way, not in a way – like, he was like, I stay at Bono's castle in Ireland. And then, you know, the interviewer was like, is U2 still making good music? And he kind of shakes his head like, man, I don't know. But then he goes on to talk about some of the charity work that they've done together that he really thinks is valuable. Like, what's interesting to me is that his daughters intervened to get him to stop just saying, like, yeah, Michael Jackson had a tough upbringing. Or, you know, Ringo Starr wasn't great at the drums. Like – I'm not 100% sure why that mattered to his daughters, but also his daughters. Well, I only know about Rashida Jones, really. And she seems, well, first of all, I like had a fairly large crush on her for the last 15 years. But also, she seems very level headed and smart and with it. So if she decided that she needed to sit down with him and like tell him that this was not totally cool to do. I assume she and her sisters had a good reason for it, but being way on the outside of it, I don't really know what that reason would be.
I'm about to say something here, and I'm going to confuse people, and I hope it's not. Is Rashida Jones also the person who had the documentary-style series on a cable station about the about Scientology and her getting out of it?
No, that
God,
is...
who am I thinking of?
You're thinking of Leah Remini from King of Queens.
Remini, yes, yes. I don't know why I get those guys confused in my head a little bit. I am assuming that... There must have been tons of blowback. I mean, maybe think of this less as a story about Quincy Jones, but frame it as a story about your own, let's just say your mom in this case. You know, like, we've had your mom on the show a million times. I think I've never heard her say anything that isn't, you know, again, kind of based on loving principles, I think, and good-heartedness and all of that. But as you mentioned, like yourself, your mom likes to talk. You know, what if she had her own podcast? She started flipping shit about, I don't know, anything, your neighbors, whatever. And now suddenly you're dealing with tons of blowback from something that your mom said. I'm really sorry to put your mom out here like this, by the way. Your mom has done nothing wrong.
Well,
but still, I am going to get
she
justice.
She was definitely the weak link in the Beatles. I mean, I think you listen to the albums and you can just tell. So she kind of has it coming.
Oh, my God. She barely can play the drums. No offense, Susie.
I guess this is more just
like kids just being like, oh, God damn it. Like, I can't spend all my time like dealing with blowback from bullshit that dad is saying.
I mean, yeah, I guess so. I mean, yeah, like I'm going to just keep referring to Rashida Jones because she's the one Jones daughter I can think of. I wouldn't be surprised if I know about Quincy Jones's other daughters and maybe don't even know that they're his daughters. But like, I guess I can imagine when this went around the internet, probably at every dinner she went to and like dog park, her friends and people who didn't know her were probably all like, holy shit, that interview with your dad was hilarious. So she was probably tired of hearing that. I can't see it being like overly negative though. Like he didn't say like, I just didn't feel like it was actually controversial, which was kind of what was charming about it. Like he wasn't saying something that he really needed to walk back, in my opinion. And yes, I'm sure it was the main topic of conversation for anyone. I'm sure that the actor who plays Starla the business model. God, I wish we had a drop for that. Well, maybe
do we have anything?
Okay, you're a perfectionist. Flashes of Quincy.
I'm sure that actress has been answering questions about the Quincy Jones interview because she played a character on Arrested Development that references him. So I'm sure that anyone in his orbit has been – it's been a topic of conversation. But again, I remain a little surprised that it rose to the level of them wanting to tell him to apologize. But, you know, I have to say, as far as apologies go, I mean, somehow he emerges from this with me liking him even more because – like, the fact is the guy's brain is still flexible at 85. Think about how many 85-year-olds would just dig in their heels and just be like...
Oh, yeah. The very last sentence he wrote, so I encourage you all to please grow with me and keep on keeping on. Love an 85-year-old bow-legged man who is still learning from his mistakes. And then does some sort of emoji that I cannot decipher
That's very Buddhist of him, too. This guy, George Saunders, I was talking to last night, was talking... He wrote a book about Lincoln... and he said that what he thought was amazing about Lincoln was that Lincoln's, as he got older and as he, you know, got into his presidency, his ego actually got smaller and smaller. And this guy, George Saunders, was saying the goal as we get older is to be more open, to have less ego, to be less sure of ourselves, to like go in the opposite direction of what we mostly do as humans. And I got to say, not to over dramatize what Quincy Jones has done here, but he seems pretty open for 85.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I'm going to regret saying this. We could just leave it there.
Well, they can always get Fred Savage to go back and edit it out, so don't worry.
Okay, good. Yeah, that'll be my new code word for editing the show. I'll just Fred Savage that out. What I was going to say was not that the bar should be this low, but it was an interview with an 85-year-old man that did not have any kind of that was very wide ranging, hit on a bunch of things, including gay sex, but never hinted at homophobia.
Yeah.
Never hinted at being creepy about women.
Yeah.
Or somebody being hot, or, you know,
right,
somebody age inappropriate, or like the male gaze, any of that stuff is not in this interview at all. And again, we should expect that of everybody. Nobody should get a fucking parade for not being sexist. Sorry for the
You
language,
better be quoting Quincy
I'm
Jones
the-
when you said that.
I am quoting Theo when I say meow. Anyway, sorry, that probably hurt your ears. Anyway, so you had a kind of interaction with it, was it Asner or,
yeah,
or somebody of that generation that was kind of like, you know, somebody who is, again, top of his field in his generation, somebody very respected, famous, admired, all those things. But in his 80s, you put him on stage, you put him in front of a microphone, you put him in front of a reporter, and some things that do not withstand scrutiny in 2018 start coming out of his mouth. And then you can imagine being a family member of that person. Says, Dad, you gotta come on, stop saying this stuff. But Quincy Jones, none of that, none of that. Just sort of a loving, but at times, you know, somewhat harsh criticism. Well, I guess loving criticism of the people that he's met in his life.
And you wanna really hear this conversation taken to a place it shouldn't go. Because by the way,
I always can count on you.
Yeah,
whenever I say we should leave it there, but I'm going to ruin it with this one thing. You've always got a nice
I've got your back,
to
my friend. I've got your
Thank
back.
You.
Like the other thing he doesn't seem to be practicing at all is like what's sort of called respectability politics, like a Bill Cosby move. In other words, there can be a tendency I have observed from my side of the world, which is Whitetown, that
you still live in Whiteton?
Yeah, it's just, you know what? It's like if we sell our house, we can't buy another house. So we're just, you know, here. It's like, it's cool. Like, we have built up a lot of equity, but it's sort of, you know, it's like, where are we going to move if we sell? So here we are. Like, there can be sometimes a tendency I've observed of like African American men of a certain age who came up and had to earn everything. Let me quote you quoting Theo quoting Quincy Jones, have had to earn every fucking thing that then can sometimes get into this mode when they're older of like, here is how younger African-American men need to behave. And like, that's something Bill Cosby has done. I know there's been a lot of pushback against that. And Quincy Jones seems to be completely not wired that way. Like in this interview, he keeps talking about like the racism in this country is as bad or worse than it's ever been. Like he's just because he's a millionaire or maybe billionaire, he's not saying like, hey, everything's cool in this country, or hey, you know, younger African American men, here's how you should be acting. Like racism, it was worse when I was, you know, when I was 20. Everyone relaxed. Like he's not doing any
of that.
Pull
your pants up.
Yeah, exactly. The pull your pants up thing. He does not appear to be doing any of that. Which again, to me, is like, if he were to do that, I would be like, well, I can kind of see how your brain starts to go in that direction. It's like he's not even doing that. Like he feels like he could be, you know, like a college senior in the way what is left in the interview, right? Because who knows what was cut out. But as far as what we were able to see, like you said, he doesn't appear to be saying anything that's gendered in a way that we don't talk anymore. He doesn't seem to be saying anything that's homophobic. Seems like his brain is pretty up to date on how we're talking about things. And I think that's, you know, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah. There is some is I know I just kind of keep saying the same thing, but even though he was saying things that were kind of hilariously harsh, it was all coming from a place of respect. All right. I know you know about TBTL, the podcast. You're listening to it right now. But have you tried TBTL, the newsletter? Because you can. Just go over to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. I gotta say, it's a lot of fun. Every week, Luke and I record a little video that we include in the newsletter. It's called Hey Dummies. We answer your questions, any questions you want to ask us. Well, there's all kinds of things in the newsletter. Don't take my word for it. Here, this is Mary. She's a big fan of the newsletter.
It has a nice welcome introduction, but then you have these phenomenal GIFs that are so much fun. You talk about amazing, wonderful people, and you introduce us to new things. And then the songs of the week. Oh, my gosh. And it just makes me so happy.
It can make you happy, too. I mean, listen, this is coming from Mary. She doesn't even listen to the podcast. She's here just for the newsletter. No joke. So, again, go to tbtl.net and click on the button that says sign me up for the TBTL newsletter. And we'll try to bring a little extra sunshine to your inbox every Friday afternoon.
All right. Let us do a little music for your weekend before we get out of here, my friend. Do you have a song picked out this week? Or are you just going to try to wing it?
I do not, but if you go first, I could
probably
come up with something.
Can do.
But I should probably play your selection from my
end, right? That'll make sense. So this guy, Chris Staples, is a singer. I think he's from Florida originally. I actually don't know if he lives in the Northwest, but I think his label is like Barsook Records or something. So he has a Northwest association. And I was at this fundraiser a couple weeks ago, and this guy had kindly donated an item, which is that he would, you know, write a song for anyone, like a personalized song, if they donated to this good cause. And so I was like, well, let me see what this guy's all about. And I went onto the internet. I started listening to his music, and I just was like, oh, my God, I love this so much. He has a newer album out, which is really good, but I'm particularly taken with an album he has called, like, American Soft. And this is a song off of that. It's called Black Tornado. It's Chris Staples. Can you play that for us, Andrew? There you go. That is my recommendation.
I like it.
That whole record is great, by the way, and it goes from kind of slower songs to I mean, that's probably the most upbeat number on the album, American Soft, but it's like that's one of those ones I've just been putting on the first song and just letting it go all the way till the end, which I have to say, sadly, because, you know, I can't ever listen to anything that isn't the perfect thing I want in the moment. I don't listen to a ton of records just front to back anymore, and that's one that I can. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, me too. I mentioned this late on Friday, very end of last Friday's show, which my guess is literally nobody got to. But I am still hooked on. Remember, we were talking about MGMT like 2 weeks ago for Music for Your Weekend, because there was a new record out, and I was like, yeah, but I'm kind of getting into their sophomore album, and I have still, like, for the past 2 weeks, like, I've been turning off the talk radio a little bit more and just, like, listening to just that album over and over again. And as a matter of fact, I was listening to that album when I was making pho the other day, last Sunday. And, you know, on Spotify, when your album runs out, it'll just start making an impromptu playlist for you based on whatever album you were just listening to. And this song came on. This is not MGMT. I can't do that 3 weeks in a row.
Is it REMGMT?
It's REMGMT.
Sweet.
And the song is I can't do it. I
was going to try to do.
I don't know. I was going to try to make a REMGMT song, but I couldn't think of.
I blame that on.
I
blame that on MGMT, by the way.
Yeah.
Okay. I blame that on MGMT because most of the names of the MGMT songs don't make any sense. Like, you can name. Don't you think?
Well, the album I've been listening to, actually, the like usually the like the song I played last week was I Found a Whistle. That is like a thing they say over and over. I feel like their song titles are, it's not like Of Montreal. I mean, Of Montreal, which, by the way, listening to so much MGMT makes me want to go back. I went through an Of Montreal phase, and now I'm sort of feeling the sort of similarities between them. But though Of Montreal songs, those are just like ridiculous. I don't even find it. It reminds me of when me and my friend Tony were little kids and we were like making fun of poetry. So we would just like throw word salad down. That's a little bit like Of Montreal's titles.
Are we any closer to an MGMT REM song? What did you say? Night Whistle?
The song I played last week was I Found a Whistle. So I said I found a night whistle. I meant I found a night swimming. I'm really disappointed in that.
Night
thing.
Whistle deserves a quiet night. I really think I'm a little bit of practice away from taking the music of Michael Stipe show on the road.
Mm. Yes, please take it on the road.
That's happening
away from us.
Did you used to know this? Did you used to do this joke when you were a kid? Like, hey man, you're singing so good, you should sing solo.
No,
solo we can't hear it.
Oh no, you know what the one my family would say was, "Can you play Far, Far Away?" Meaning just please play somewhere else.
Funny. Or you go like, hey, man, with a voice like that, you should be on the radio. Then I could turn you off.
Oh, God, let us get out of this line of chit-chat, and I want to play my song for you.
Right.
So I'm listening to this MGMT kind of impromptu Spotify playlist that my phone is playing for me, and the song by Foxygen comes on. Now, I know this song. I feel like I used to drive around LA, and maybe it was on KCRW a lot, but then it occurred to me, maybe this is a song that you've already played for Music for Your Weekend, and that's how I know it. Do you know the band Foxygen or the song San Francisco?
I don't think so. I know, is there a band called like Foxtrot, or maybe I'm thinking of the Wilco record, Yankee Hotel Foxtrot. I know
Foxtrot for sure. Okay, well, let's take a listen to this. They have there's a couple of guys out of LA. This is from 2013. They have a very retro sound, and so this will sound like, I was convinced this was a cover of an oldie. I don't think it is, though. I think it's original, and it's called San Francisco. I had to get to the chorus.
Oh,
sorry,
man.
It takes so long to
get to
it. Dude,
the background vocals, that makes that song.
Oh, I know. That's why I didn't realize they hit so late, but I fucking love it. All week, this part has been going through my head. Anyway, that's okay. I was born in L.A.
It starts pretty Donovan-y, but then it kind of goes. It's just sort of like the ghost of the mamas and the papas are chilling in the background singing.
Well, it's like a Strawberry Alarm Clock or something. You know,
yeah. I have to say, like at the beginning, I was like, I don't know if this is for me, but the chorus and the background singers and the little call and response that won me over.
I'm definitely, yeah. There's something about, I don't know, our talk of early Pink Floyd and me listening to Congratulations, that album a lot, and then this. Like, I'm definitely going through something where all the music I'm listening to is kind of that kind of sound.
All right, we have a listener suggestion this week, which is how we always end our broadcast week. Thank you so much, everybody, for hanging out with us and for being a part of TBTL. You know, it's basically a barn raisin, people, and from the donors to the people who email in to the people who tell their friends about it to the people who are doing the TBTL Challenge, which you can check out over at tbtlchallenge.com. Everybody's in on this thing happening, and I just really appreciate it. All the support from everybody out there in TBTL listener land, including listener Jill, who emailed in. If you would like to send me a Music for Your Weekend suggestion, by the way, email me, luke@tbtl.net, and just put Music for Your Weekend in the subject line. Please link to a YouTube video or something. I don't have Spotify. I am the only person who's not on Spotify, who's younger than Quincy Jones. But I can't open things on Spotify because it would take me 5 minutes to sign up for it, and who has the time? But anyway, Jill did send in an email. She did include a link that was probably YouTube, and she said, "Hi, Luke and Andrew. Our 20-year-old son recently recommended the movie The Hunt for the Wilder People. I loved it from the first minute to the last and have since watched it two more times." Did you see that movie, Andrew?
No, I don't think I've heard of it.
It's made by this guy who actually, his name is, I'm going to totally massacre his last name, but his name is like Taiko Watiki, and he's a New Zealand filmmaker, and he actually, he directed some massive Marvel movie now, but before that, he was making these, he's like friends with the Flight of the Conchords dudes, and he's made all these great movies. He made this movie called What We Do in the Shadows, which is like a sort of Waiting for Guffman vampire movie with Jumaine from the Flight of the Conchords. And he's in it. He acts in that one. Anyway, he's a really interesting, cool dude, and I'm a huge fan of his work. And so he directed this movie, which has Sam Neill in it. You may know his work from the OG Jurassic Park. Anyway, and like
Clever Girl,
that's the one. You know, I think they're well, I'm not. This is not news. They're like rebooting the second Jurassic Park movie with Chris Pratt.
Pratt, yeah.
But I didn't see the first like reboot one, but they had to have a Clever Girl reference in there, right? I mean, that's like the takeaway from that movie.
God, I don't know if they winked and nodded at that very particular line. I feel like they might have. I was pretty unimpressed with the reboot. I actually liked it at first because I thought they did a really cool job with the park. And I'm not somebody who like thinks, you know, I don't go on long tears about like, oh, there are no new ideas in Hollywood. Why they kind of keep on ruining my childhood by rebooting these movies? I don't give a shit. I also didn't see the original Jurassic Park until a few years ago. So, you know, it's not like I was applying a super critical eye to the movie. But I thought they did a really cool job with the park aspect of the new movie. But it just got so, there was something, I mean, as crazy as to say, something believable about the original. And this just got so dumb, getting into the psychology of dinosaurs and stuff.
Yeah, this is going to be, this is old man yells at CGI cloud. But just because you can doesn't mean you should with the technology. Right. Like there really was something to being constrained at least slightly by having to like build real kind of animatronic robots and do forced perspective and like just get kind of creative with real life, you know, props and things. And that wasn't always perfect, but I've rarely seen a movie that had a lot of CGI in it that did not feel like CGI to me.
Yeah, they're just not there yet, but it's so heavily used.
Well, I'll tell you, The Hunt for the Wilder People has no CGI in it that I remember, but it does have some great scenes, and I thought it was a good movie as well. Carrie and I saw it at the Pickford in Bellingham. Anyway, Jill said, "I loved it from the first minute to last. I've since watched it two more times. My recommendation for Music for Your Weekend comes from the soundtrack. It's Nina Simone's Sinnerman." Now, I've been kind of, I don't know, for the last year having obviously... This is not, I'm not breaking any new ground here, but I've been really digging on Nina Simone. Like, everyone's been digging on Nina Simone, but I have to say, like, maybe I wouldn't put her in my top, like, five, like, singers that I was crazy about, but then I watched this documentary What Happened, Miss Simone, which is on Netflix, and it just friggin' blew my mind.
I haven't seen that, but I remember when it came out. I really should. But and also, you're a jazz man now.
Well,
like,
that's
I don't know
the
if you
thing.
Would technically like, right. But I mean, I don't know if you would technically call her a jazz singer, but certainly some of her stuff is kind of in that world, instrumentation wise. And now you're like a totally different person. You're like Jazzy Luke.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, DJ Jazzy Luke, I'm going to go visit LL Cool Luke, my nephew.
At the House of Appropriations in Whiten?
God, that's a good way to end the show and the week. Oh, we didn't talk about show titles.
Hey, guess what? I just woke up.
Hey, good. All right. In three,
hey, I got there.
Two, and one, starting the show. Do you have an idea for a show title? Either I was thinking Fred Savage Time Traveler or Mialerdat.
Or a Mohawk of Boz's, or the House of Appropriation in Whiten.
I'm good with that. I'm good with any of it. I will leave it to you. Well, my job
let's
here.
Let's go with a Mohawk of Boz's.
My job here is to take a picture of this picture in my hotel room and send it to you.
That's how we. Oh, because I told you I found that photo, the exact one we're talking about, and it's going to cost us $575 if we wanted to get it off of Getty, which I don't have time to start a TBTL-a-thon today to raise that kind of money. So I thought that was a no go. But do we get around the? Can you put like? Can you take a selfie with yourself in front of it so we can have plausible deniability?
Absolutely, that's new art. Except we may be sued by the estate of Marvin Gaye. We just get to roll the dice.
Yes.
All right. So here it is. Little Nina Simone, Sinner Man, to go out. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Again, thank you so much for being a part of TBTL. We'll be right back here on Monday with more Imaginary Radio for you. Until then, please remember, no mountain too tall.
And good luck to all.
Where you gonna run to? All on that day, will I run to the rock? Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me and run to the rock. Please hide me, Lord, all on that day. But the rock cried out, I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I can't hide you, the rock cried out. I ain't gonna hide you, Dad. All on that day, I said, Rock, what's the matter with you, Rock? Don't you see I need you, Rock? Lord, Lord, Lord. All on that day, so I ran to the river. It was bleeding, ran to the sea. It was bleeding around to the sea. It was bleeding all on that day. So I ran to the river. It was boiling around to the sea. It was boiling around to the sea. It was boiling all on that day. So I ran to the Lord. Please help me, Lord. Don't you see me pray? See me down here praying, but the Lord said, go to the devil, the Lord said, go to the devil, he said, go to the devil, all on that day.
Power out.